on your screen. Is it Starmer's controversial AI reforms that we should be paying attention to, or problems in the NHS? Or was it Tony Blair looking after our mental health? Well, no. The most dangerous one we saw was the Telegraph, which is on the tucked away on the left of the screen. Let's bring this on. Here it is. Net Zero Nudge Unit accused of COVID scare tactics will push heat pumps on the public. So here we've got that the public is to replace all of their gas boilers with the controversial and many say inefficient heat pumps. But the government is so desperate to get this agenda rammed home that they're going to use the Behavioural Insights team. And yes, this was the team that was working with the government and other psychologists in order to scare the public during lockdown so that the public better followed the government's directives. So scare, fear, anxiety being unleashed on the public in order that we should follow the government's policy. Now, the Telegraph does mention that fear factor, and that one of the Behavioural Insights team members was concerned about it. But of course, what the Telegraph didn't do is go into the depths of the beast in order to show the public what we're really talking about. So UK Column will do that now. This is the Mindspace document out of the Cabinet Office in 2010. I'm putting it up on screen so that all of the information is there in front of you. But David Halpin mentioned it in the text on the right, one of the key people. And if we get into that document, there was a paragraph saying potential for controversy, where the government was admitting that if and when people really understood what was happening, they would accuse the government of brainwashing. That's absolutely what the government was doing. And then this was one of the key sentences. When this applied psychology was used, they said that means that citizens may not fully realize that their behavior is being changed, or at least how it is being changed. Clearly, this opens up the government to charges of manipulation. So whatever you think about politicians, that they lie, deceive, cheat, or they're into criminal activity, or even children, these people now using applied psychology. And the UK Column warned and warned and warned about this. Here's May 2013, when we're pointing out that Francis Maude was busy promoting that so-called nudge unit. And then with it, we also warned in 2018, a little bit before, if I remember correctly, these key statements. So Cameron ally and one-time advisor Danny Kruger was forced to resign as a Tory candidate for Sedgefield after he was quoted as saying that the Conservatives' plan to introduce a period of creative destruction in the public services. And Ben, surely that's what we've got happening around us at the moment. But that was one quote. Nicholas Bowles, MP, at the same time, was quoted in The Guardian and elsewhere. The Prime Minister and his deputy, Nick Clegg, want their people power revolution to unleash chaotic effects across local communities. Chaotic, therefore, in our vocabulary, is a good thing. These people, deadly serious, they were going to break the country, and they were going to do it in a revolutionary sense. And essentially, they were going to break down the structure of our society in order to build back better. Well, that's the phrase that they're now using. Now, there were other warnings. So if we just bring this one on screen, we've got Peter Hitchens. He said we're on the verge of founding Britain's first thought police. Well, clearly that's already happened. And look at the date. This is 2015, when the UK Column was warning about this. Now, if we've got a state that is going to use propaganda and psychological reframing to change the minds of the population, we shouldn't be surprised if that's going to be used when there's a state of war to help make people in this country more fearful. Let's have a look at Ukraine, because, of course, that's one of the major conflict areas in the world today. Here's the BBC headline, Russia claims capture of Ukrainian frontline town. But if we put in what the real headline should be, Russia continues to advance on key fronts, and Russia is poised to capture the strategic cities of Pokrovsk, Chasiv Yar, and Turetsk. And these captures mean that there is a massive change on the battlefield. But of course, the BBC is simply not telling the truth. Here's another BBC headline: Zelensky offers exchange of North Korean soldiers. So you were led to believe one thing by the headline itself. I'll come back onto that. But if we put some truthful headlines here, Russia is close to finalizing Ukraine's Kursk salient. 50,000 declared Ukrainian casualties in that sector of the front alone. Ukrainian losses climb as Ukraine retreats. So this is to be expected, because as men leave their defensive positions, they're more vulnerable to attack. And the other thing that's been happening is the desertions in the Ukrainian army have been climbing and climbing as morale in their army is collapsing. No mention of this for the BBC. And this is the little piggy from the BBC that the soldier that their article discussed had exhibited Russian ID, showing that he was Turan from the Russian Republic of Tuvan, which is on the Mongolian border. And significantly, there was no speech. So we have to believe that these are Koreans, when the reality seems to be that actually they are Russians from that Mongolian border area. However, the BBC doesn't bother with the facts. It just wants to get the spin headline out. And if we look at what's been going on in more detail, this is the sort of thing that the press has been talking about. The Russian army is incompetent and morale is poor. That was a lie. The Russian military equipment is inferior. Another lie. Ukraine will win because the Russians hate Putin and the Russian people will force a regime change. That was clearly untrue. Russia is running out of munitions. Well, that was a laughable claim at the time, but it goes on. Ukraine will win because of Western weapons, such as the Javelin anti-tank missiles or the Patriot missile systems. That was all proven to be false. Ukraine will win because of US, UK and NATO special forces and military advisors. None of that worked. Ukraine will win because of US, German and UK tanks. That's the Abrahams, the Leopard and the Challenger tanks. They're busy burning on the battlefield. And on the propaganda goes, Ukraine will win because of US F-16s. That, of course, never happened. Ukraine will win because of NATO training for Ukrainian conscripts at NATO bases. That was false. Ukraine will win because of those special advisors. Sorry, that's a duplication there. And Ukraine will win because of US and NATO drones. If we look at the facts on the ground, we're seeing that the Russians are outperforming the whole of the Ukrainian military, the US and NATO combined, and they're outstripping the US and NATO in their productions of munitions on the battlefield. We've got that the Russian air defense, particularly the missile systems such as the S-400, are showing outstanding performance, and the Russian adaptation to drone warfare, surveillance and attack is clearly outstanding. And it goes on, because the Russians' electronic warfare was described as eye-watering by an American general two years ago, in fact. The Russian glide bomb technology, up to 3,000 kilogram flying bombs, is outstanding, and there's no Ukrainian or Western defense. And the Russian hypersonic missile technology is outstripping the US and Western technology. So overall, the situation is that the Russian military, the army and the air force in particular, has adapted to large scale battle conditions in Ukraine. And even though they've been under the combined US, NATO and Ukrainian space, airborne and drone battlefield surveillance system, their performance has been outstanding. That is not for the UK column to be promoting Russia per se. What we are demonstrating here is the sheer lies and propaganda that's come through the BBC and the Western press about the reality of the battle. Meanwhile, in UK, and again, the UK column has been warning about this. We see the breakdown of our own military. So here is a sex incident on board one of our nuclear submarines, which resulted in the captain of that vessel being relieved of his command. And if that isn't enough, here's the Armed Forces Network getting very excited because Satanism has been approved for use in the Royal Navy. We're an equal opportunities employer and we don't stop anybody from having their own religious values. Our policy is that wherever practical, reasonable requests for time and facilities that do not impact on operational effectiveness or the welfare of other personnel are met. I believe we're looking at deliberate orchestrated breakdown across our society. It's the NHS, it's education, it's the police, it's the military. This is not accidental. We are being attacked by our own government. And I think, Ben, you've got more to tell us about how this is being done.
Absolutely. And it's not just our own government. It's also the market, importantly, the public private partnership that's being used to create chaos out of which a new order will be built. And I'm going to reintroduce you to this gentleman, Brent Hoberman, CBE. The British establishment are absolutely at the centre of all of this. We're going to meet a few people today who have honours from the royal family. And I mentioned him first on the column on the 16th of December last year. He's the exec chairman of Founders Factory. He was the co-founder of LastMinute.com, which he sold for $1.1 billion in 2005, is where he established most of his wealth. And he's now been ploughing that into disruptive innovation, startups. He also works on the UK advisory board for government digital services. So he sits right at the heart of digitization of the British state. Interestingly, there's a link there between the Mindspace document and GDS, which I don't have time to get into right now. But there's something that happened in the early years of that first Cameron government that is really crucial to understand what we're seeing around us today. He's also on the advisory board of Google Cloud. So we can see how the technology companies in the state are really beginning to merge around people like this. He's also on the advisory board for the World Economic Forum Digital Europe Group, and he is a young global leader of the World Economic Forum, right? So very important individual. We spoke about this meeting, this brainstorming session that he had last year with Rachel Reeves, UK Chancellor, and Peter Kyle, Secretary of State for Science, Innovation and Technology, where they talked about using AI across government, spreading AI outside of urban centres. Really importantly, they want this to be used across the whole country, also plugging Ewan Blair's recruitment company into central government to create a marketplace for new types of people being employed by central government, and then also stripping back regulations around technology. That was the focus of this conversation. Hoberman is also very closely linked into Oxford University. We spoke about his backing for William Hague to be the Oxford Chancellor. Hague has been elected as Oxford Chancellor. Hoberman was part of the campaign to make that happen, and he's also very keen, as I suppose you'd expect, on Elon Musk helping Britain slash public spending, the digitization of the state, bringing in big tech billionaires into central government in order to transform how things are run, the new order ultimately out of this chaos that we're seeing, the breakdown that we're seeing. Now, I mentioned this group, Founders Forum. All right, so this is where he has put a lot of his money, his time and his investments since 2005. It's grown a lot. I used to work in this space. I was aware of them. It was a really high-level network, very exclusive, invitation only. It was primarily focused around an event, but they've subsequently expanded the group out into a whole bunch of different areas. So they've got the events and the networking, bringing people together, facilitating conversations, convening is the big word that I hear people using nowadays. They convene politicians, investors, startup founders. They've got an education dynamic to what they do. They've got professional services, so they can advise you as a startup founder in their curated community around legal issues, around strategic communication. How do you hire people? How do you incentivize them? They've also got an investment component. So part of that is First Minute Capital, which is essentially like a family office type setup for Hoberman. He's got a load of his money in there. But then also they've got a broader proposition around Founders Factory. They've got a philanthropy component as well. So they can actually, once they've made you a millionaire, they can help you spend that money in a philanthropic way. And you can imagine how all that money gets directed, right? It's all the same kind of social innovation stuff that we're used to, the kind of things that we talk about a lot in terms of the philanthropic space on the column. And you can see, if we go back to the slide there, this is all backed by their partners in this are big tech, Google, Salesforce. You've got McKinsey, the global strategy firm in there, Goldman Sachs, HSBC. Now, as you get an understanding of the kind of pedigree that we're talking about here, like it's quite an impressive mix, to be perfectly honest with you. And actually, they've also, interestingly for me in particular, sold this organization, Founders Intelligence, into Accenture, which is one of the big systems integrators, the big technology consulting firms. And that will actually sit in the group that was that where a company that I used to work at was sold back in 2018. Yeah, so I was right in the sweet spot of my professional background, right? We're helping people with these kinds of strategic problems relating to technology, right? So this is it's a really interesting group. They've got a lot of stuff going on. But a lot of it for me is really it's about, first of all, burnishing the reputation of the big technology firms. So these big tech firms are key strategic partners to Founders Forum. And these are the people that are ultimately going to be building the infrastructure on which this new digital future is going to be built. But they are horrible companies. Yeah, they are deeply unethical. They spy, they lie, they track, they trace, they abuse their power. And they're really the robber barons of the 21st century. So in order to kind of address that, rather than changing their behavior, what they do is they come along and they say, hey, look, we're going to invest in UK startups and we're going to help create a new economic system for people to have an opportunity to create wealth for themselves by becoming startup founders, right? So they'll get in organizations like Founders Forums to establish these ecosystems that ultimately, in reality, they can invest in. Yeah. So this is presented as a kind of altruistic move where they're trying to establish fairness in the economic system, but actually that's not what's happening at all. And they'll use it as a reputation washing exercise, ultimately, for people like this. One example from a recent report from Founders Forum, this guy, John Bomfrey, who's the UK country manager at Amazon. You can see at the bottom there that they've first in being the most supportive to tech founders. They've invested $430 million in European startups across 17 transactions since 2019. And he says, we have a responsibility to support the thriving and diverse startup ecosystem in Europe, but they've actually destroyed the high street.
Yep.
Yeah. So we don't have a high street anymore. We've got Amazon. And if you look at the impact that's had on British cities, it's completely destroyed them, right? You know, the high street was a focal point of daily life. We've now got Amazon. Yeah.
We've now got people stuck at home waiting for a box to arrive instead of interaction with people on the high street. That's the point.
Yeah, exactly. The Founders Forum is here saying, oh, no, they're helping us build a new economy. This is fantastic. And obviously Google are in there as well. It's another one of the big tech companies. So we can see that they've invested in 50 funding rounds over the past 5 years. They've invested $730 million. One out of two startup founders think that they're great. And Debbie Weinstein, who at the time was actually the head of the UK for Google, she's now just been bumped up to run Europe. She's EMEA top lady for the whole of, not just top lady, top individual for the whole of Google, this lady, Debbie Weinstein. She's saying that competition is healthy for everyone. We want to see more businesses leveraging the power of technology to improve people's lives.
Except if they're challenging Google.
Well, quite, right? And this is really the key point, right? And actually, there's a little quote here, again, from one of the Founders Forum reports, this lady, Angie Marr, saying, big tech provides the platform on which businesses are run. So when Debbie Weinstein's talking about enabling competition, what she's actually saying is you can operate on top of our infrastructure, right? But you're going to buy from us. This is a marketplace that we have built and control, and you can come in with your little fiddly startup, whatever it might be. We might chuck you a bit of money. We might let you in our office from time to time, but ultimately you're never actually going to challenge Google fundamentally in its core business, right? And when we talk about big tech, it's these companies, yeah? So Meta, aka Facebook, Instagram, WhatsApp on the top left there, Nvidia, which is kind of the new kid on the block, specializes in chips for AI systems, and then Google, Amazon, Apple, Microsoft, right? And this is the hegemony, right? This is the global digital marketplace, and the whole of the business world, in their view, needs to run on top of this stuff. And so they're completely dominant, and these are all American technology companies, importantly. But also, just as importantly, it's not just the market, it's also the state. Increasingly, it's the state. And Blair, at his event, Future of Britain event last year, was saying, I'm advising Labour to talk to Google. He's advising Labour to talk to Debbie Weinstein. And I know that Debbie Weinstein has been talking directly to Starmer and other members of the cabinet. They're particularly interested in education at the moment. That's their big focus area. Yeah. Public-private partnership, digitization of the economic system, and the replacement of what used to constitute economic activity and output with something that, isn't what we used to think it was.
Yeah, showing something for your labour and your work, actually creating something. Yeah,
exactly. So that doesn't exist anymore. We've now got just apps. And the same thing is about to happen to the state, and it's being driven by people like Tony Blair. And actually, Founders Forum are right at the heart of this, because really interestingly, and I was mind slightly blown when I came across this last week, in 2023, they acquired this organization, TechNation. Right? Now, superficially, TechNation looks basically a bit like Founders Forum Group, right? So it's an ecosystem of different component parts. They're interested in climate, because obviously everyone's interested in climate. They've got a Rising Stars program where they bring in young people that they want to be tech innovators. They've got a Future 50 program, which is all about the next big 50 tech companies in the UK that are going to list on the stock market, right? It was founded by this guy, Gerard Grech, CBE, who has now, after the acquisition, gone on to run something called Founders Cambridge. He's the MD of Founders Cambridge, which means that between Hoberman at Oxford and Grech at Cambridge, this new integrated proposition of TechNation and Founders Forum have basically sewn up Oxbridge. Yeah. So if you think about all of the intellectual firepower of Oxford and Cambridge University and how that can be commercialized, these two people, this organization, are absolutely slap bang in the middle of it. And he's the founder of TechNation. He's also on the UK Government Digital Economy Council, and he's also a member of the World Economic Forum Digital Economy Board. Yeah. So we can see again, WEF, UK government, they've integrated.
Yeah. Totally linked. Totally linked.
Yeah. So they're operating hand in glove. And TechNation is quite an impressive organization. Again, I remember when this popped up, I was still working in industry. They've been at the heart of what they call a remarkable decade of tech growth. So we've seen $1 trillion added to the UK technology ecosystem. That's just valuation, by the way. Like, that's not actual output. That's just what we think we can flog this for, really importantly. It's what this whole ecosystem is about. In the UK, we now have 135 tech unicorns, which is a 10x increase in 10 years. A unicorn is a privately owned company worth $1 billion or more. All right. So again, we used to have an economy. Now we've got tech unicorns, where you get a tiny handful of people in these highly automated technology enabled companies who have these huge valuations, which we then get presented as being good for the country. But it's not good for the country. It's good for the people who run those companies and the people who invested in them, and organizations like Founders Forum.
Yeah.
But actually, for the broad population, there's absolutely nothing here at all. And we also apparently got 10 decacorns, which is privately held companies worth $10 billion or more, right? And what kind of companies are we talking about? Is this kind of these kinds of companies. You know, lots of app logos there, but the ones that jumped out at me was Deliveroo, right? So, you know, that's delivering kebabs via an app. That's economic output now, apparently. We used to have a steel industry. We used to have a coal industry. We used to have proper manufacturing. Now we've got kebabs being delivered by a lot of illegal immigrants, frankly. You know, that's what their workforce is built on, you know.
Because it's cheap labour.
Because it's cheap labour. Yeah, exactly. So they're helping to form these things, establish them, float them on the stock markets. This is from last month. So you can actually see Brett Hoberman there on the balcony at the London Stock Exchange with one of these startups that they're promoting. But where did this come from? Right, really crucially, yeah, because this for me is absolutely critical in understanding this particular group, right? Is that actually the tech city, the tech nation initiated from, there's a timeline here, I can't go through all of it right now, right? But actually initiated here in 2011 from the Tech City Investment Organization, right, which was launched by Prime Minister David Cameron in April 2011 to support East London's tech cluster. And it was originally part of UK Trade and Investment. So this is a UK government asset. It was founded, not least in part, on the back of advice from this guy, Rohan Silver, who was an advisor to David Cameron. He's the guy that co-authored that article trying to bring Elon Musk in to digitise the British state. And fascinatingly, they actually ran the global talent visa programme, bringing in high-tech people into the UK economy. And so they brought nearly 5,500 people in over the past 10 years on these global talent visas endorsed by Tech Nation. And after the acquisition, that is now being handled by the Founders Forum Group.
It's one huge network. And at the time that David Cameron was helping set this lot up, he was also bringing in his Big Society, which a lot of people think never happened, but actually it's absolutely happened. It's just it's happened under the surface. So there was the technological aspect, and there was also the control of society, including by creating what was called an army. That was the word used, an army of young people, the change agents, to help bring this new society through. So all happening in front of our very eyes once you know where to look.
Yeah, absolutely. And all again, just to bring Hoberman back on screen, going directly down to the bottom line there, this is World Economic Forum, particularly this public-private marketplace and the way that advanced technology, the big tech companies, international capital, the British government are coordinating with each other and to effect this transformation of the economic system. And then increasingly, as we'll see, certainly this year, it will accelerate the digitization of the British state, all being driven out of this network.
Okay, I'm going to say to that, Ben, of course, UK Column is talking about this because we consider this to be the real news to understand what is happening around us in our society and in the political system. But the BBC and the main newspapers and the other TV channels simply do not talk about this. It's as if it doesn't exist. They prefer us to be distracted.